Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
I'm excited for tonight. So tonight you potentially have two teams that could be eliminated. Both the road teams are favored. This coming off the home teams tonight being road teams and pulling off upsets in game five. Atlanta came from 26 down to win in Philly two nights ago. And the Clippers, I think they kind of led start to finish. They end up beating the Jazz two nights ago to take a 3-2 series lead, even though they don't have Kawhi Leonard. So you have that as the Here's the thing. I am a nuance guy. I am a gray area guy. That's who I am. But I completely realize, totally realize, that what we're doing in trying to break down each individual game and matchup and is not the reality of what happens long term. Like, do they say anything about how Peyton Manning played when he won his second Super Bowl, his last game of his career? No, it was awful. By his accounts, I'm sure he was awful. Doesn't matter. Won the game. When the Warriors had a 3-1 series lead and then lost to the Cavaliers, do we point out that Andrew Bogut got hurt? Rarely we even point out that Draymond Green got suspended. What we talk about is the end result. Even the Warriors' last loss in the finals to the Toronto Raptors, sometimes it is discussed that Kevin Durant got hurt. Oftentimes it is mentioned that Klay Thompson got hurt in game six. But what's not mentioned is that Durant only played in game five and they still had a chance. Game six that they lost without either of them was close. And Kevon Looney didn't even play because he was hurt that series as well. When the Pistons beat the Lakers to end the three-peat of the Lakers, Karl Malone and others got hurt. No one mentions that. We are, in our historic nature, we are result-oriented. And so tonight, tomorrow night, and potentially Sunday night, or Sunday afternoon, all that's going to matter is the results. All that's going to matter is the results. If the Clippers beat the Jazz, it's not going to be about the fact that Donovan Mitchell might not be healthy, Mike Conley might play, might not play. It's going to be an unbelievable couple of wins for the Clippers. And if the Clippers lose, as much as in the short term we'll say, well, they lost Kawhi Leonard, they had complete control of the series, the fact is that historically we don't actually look at that. Right? Nobody's going to care that the Sixers were up 26 points, only that they lost in game five. We are result-oriented culture. Like, here are the Bucks. They lost Dante DiVincenzo for the year, but now, of course, they've been helped out by Kyrie Irving spraining his ankle and James Harden up until the last two games not playing. He looked better last night, but still not great. Here's Harden after the game.
Continue to get better. You know, the last game, game five, was the first time that I even, you know, did any movement or anything like that since I got hurt. So, tonight was no different, you know. So I'm out there to do whatever it takes to win, and I got to be better on both ends of the ball, which I will be in game seven.
I actually believe it. I think you saw progress between five and six, and even if Kyrie doesn't play, you potentially have enough, and you have Kevin Durant, and Harden couldn't buy a bucket at all in the first game that he played. He looked better last night, though still not great. But if the Bucks are to beat the Nets, no one's going to historically care about the litany of injuries that have befallen the Brooklyn Nets. That's just not how we work. Like, look, I could go into the interesting part of tonight's game with the Clippers, and will they still keep throwing Rondo out there, who was just awful last game, in an effort to go small and stay small? I could point out that while up 26, it wasn't the defense, it was the 16 points in the fourth quarter on offense that really undermined the Sixers' ability to close out that game, and free throws, especially when you have Ben Simmons missing 10 of them. All that we ever actually care about is who wins and who loses. I wish it wasn't that way. I wish it was more equitable. I do. And on this show, we will try as hard as we can, to be as fair as we can and point out all the little subtle details. But that's challenging you to be a smarter sports fan and understand that certain a play here, a play there, a foul here, a foul out, an injury, and a matchup can end up favoring a team. And so sometimes you can play really, really well and just get unlucky and lose, or play well because you have an injury, you don't have enough. But none of that matters. If Atlanta beats the 76ers tonight, somebody's going to lose their job or get traded in Philadelphia. If the Clippers beat the Jazz, it's got to be some sort of change with the Jazz, only in that, like, you win all these games in regular season, you can't get out of the second round. And if the Clippers lose two additional games, there's probably a change there, even though it's Kawhi Leonard with an ACL. That's just the reality of it. Doesn't matter how well you played. It only matters if you won or lost. In most sports fans' mind. In front office minds, maybe a little different. But in terms of how it actually works, I would tell you, I would challenge you that if the Clippers or Hawks close out their series tonight, there will be a massive reaction that'll be negative in Utah. Here we go again. That'll be negative in Philadelphia, and so much so both will make a change.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I got a question for you. Have you been vaccinated? Cool. My kids are getting their second vax shot later today. Why do I share that with you? Because I don't even have any idea what the hell Cole Beasley is talking about. I got no idea. No idea. But I like Cole Beasley a great deal. And so when I say I think he's an idiot, it's not because I actually think he's an idiot. I think he's, I don't know if he's ill-informed, if he's on the watching the wrong networks. I don't know. But here's what he wrote on Twitter. And then, of course, it was written on his phone, and then he put on Twitter. Look, I'm going to, let's go to the start here. Okay. It's a public service announcement. Hi, I'm Cole Beasley, and I'm not vaccinated. I will be outside doing what I do. I'll be out in public. If you are scared of me, then steer clear or get vaccinated. Point blank, period. I may die of COVID, but I'd rather die actually living. I have family members whose days are numbered. If they want to come see me and stay at my house, and they're coming regardless of protocol. I don't play for the money anymore. My family has been taken care of. Find me if you want. My ways of living, my values are more important than to me than a dollar. I love my teammates, enjoy playing ball, because the outside BS goes out the window in these moments. I just want to win the Super Bowl and enjoy these relationships that are created along the way. I'd rather take my chances with COVID and build up an immunity that way, eat better, drink water, exercise, and do what I think is necessary to be a healthy individual. That's my choice based on my experience and what I think is best. You're an idiot. You're just not a smart person. I can't help you. I'm sorry. I'm done with the, like, we have to be nice. Like, I don't have to be nice to you. You're an idiot. I do all of those things. Only I did my part for the rest of everybody else. And I stayed quarantined when I was supposed to stay quarantined. And I got my shot when I was supposed to get my shot. Like, I'm sorry. You're just dumb. If you had a medical condition where the doctor's like, hey, listen, we shouldn't get it. Like, okay. But it's like, I do it because it's my freedom based upon my idea that if I get COVID, my body will build up immunities to it. Huh? What? What news program are you watching? Just, I'm sorry, you're just not that smart. And I'm not that smart. I'm not trying to tell you that I'm somehow smarter than people, but that's because you listen to people who know more about these things than you do. Do you understand? They spend their entire lives studying infectious disease and like, hey, this is a bad one. And here's what we should do. We get vaccines, okay, that help stop the spread of it. And it also helps it from stopping from morphing into something far worse. So you do your part, you get your shot. I won't do it because my personal freedoms. It ain't about your personal freedoms, bruh. You're echoing stupid sentiment. You sound exactly like the guy who goes like, yeah, I know they checked the ballot boxes like 10 times, but I'm telling you, they were up to no good. Like, yeah, okay, I can't help you, dude. I can't help you. All I can do is my part. And my part is telling you that if you're listening and you go like, well, my freedoms are, what do you mean your freedoms? You go in there, you sign a paper, you pick which one you want. They give you a shot. If you get the two-shot one, the first one, most people don't feel much. The second time, sometimes you feel like crap. I got the Johnson & Johnson. I felt terrible for 36 hours. I'm immunized. Right? Do you have the polio vaccine? Of course you do. Mumps, measles, like smallpox went away. How do you think it went away? Like, what are we doing? Why do we have people that think they're smarter? You're not. It's okay. You're a damn good football player. I love watching you play. Anytime I've had you on, I think you're fun. Like a dude, that's a dude I'd like to hang out with. But when you start talking about vaccines that you clearly don't know crap about, you sound like the dumbest human being on earth. Especially like, I just want to go out and live my life. Nobody said you can't. Nobody said you can't. You just go get a shot. And if you don't, that's fine. Then guess what? Can't hang out with your teammates most of the time. Like the NFL, and the only reason they haven't made it mandatory is because the NFLPA and somebody will try and, you know, it's like, and oh yeah, by the way, it's adversely affected the black community. So you want to be a good teammate? You know, want to be a good teammate to your black teammates? That's a start. That's saying that the rest, everybody else is more important than me. But the, I want to live my life and do my thing. I was unaware that when you got the shot, you could, if you got a shot, Ramos, did you know when you got your vaccine, you're not allowed to go out and live your life anymore?
I did not know that.
Yeah, you can't. I'm sorry. What did you plan on doing this weekend?
Living my life?
You can't do that.
Okay.
You know why?
Because I'm not
you vaccinated. Got vaccinated.
Oh, I got right. vaccinated.
You got
okay,
vaccinated,
I'm sorry.
Right? Well, that's what Cole Beasley's saying, that he can live his life free and easy and go out into public places, right? Like, this is just, That's where guys say things. And look, LeBron says things where you're like, that's just classically wrong. And we call him out on it. We do the same thing, Cole Beasley. It doesn't really matter. Like, if you say stupid stuff, we're going to call you out. This is stupid stuff. And bragging about, like, I'm bragging about, like, dude, everybody who has any sort of sense is like, eh. And I understand. People don't trust the government. The government didn't make these shots, dude. It's an international health crisis. International health crisis. Like, just walk down to wherever you need to go to, or I'm sure you go into the Bills facility. They'll set it up. You take the shot. You might feel like crap. You get a couple days off, and then you're fine, and you go out and you play football, and no one ever asks you a question ever again. Let's get to Ross Dellinger, who joins us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Ross, sorry you walked into that one, but that was one I was just like, I don't get it. I don't get it why guys think they know more than doctors and scientists and the rest of the world, but that's just me. How are you?
I'm fully vaccinated. and have been for a couple months now.
I'm not sure if you're aware, but Cole Beasley believes that you can only go out and live life freely if you haven't been vaccinated. So whatever your plans were this weekend, please shut them down, okay?
The most ironic thing is it's really the opposite, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's the ironic thing is it's the exact opposite of that.
Correct. Correct. Now, look, I would be equally harsh towards people who are like, you got to wear your mask. And we're like, well, what was the point of getting vaccinated? Right? I get it. Okay? Mm-hmm. But I just, yeah, he's spreading nonsense out there. All right. Two things going on in college sports. Name, image, likeness, Supreme Court, all the, and then the NCAA was, they were going to have somebody oversee all the third party stuff. Where are we with all that, noise?
Oh gosh. You know, it's murky right now. You know, the NCAA is poised to pass its own NIL legislation next week. The problem is they've been delaying it because the Supreme Court has not ruled on the Alston case, which could impact amateurism and could impact their, what they passed. The NIL, they've been waiting on the Supreme Court to rule, and it hasn't ruled yet. And if it doesn't rule by the time the vote comes around Tuesday or Wednesday next week, I don't know that there will be a vote. I don't know. They might delay it even more. But plain and simple, what the bottom line is that six states in America will have NIL, their own state NIL laws by the time – you have to excuse me. I'm outside the busy street. But we'll have NIL laws kicking in July 1. So schools in those six states, their athletes will be able to enter endorsement deals starting July 1. And unless the NCAA passes something or there's some waiver or something, which there probably will be, if there's not going to be actually legislation passed next week, Mark Emmert will pass some kind of blanket waiver to allow everybody else to, you know, do NIL deals, to enter NIL deals. So that'll all start July 1. The problem is, Doug, is you're going to have differences in a NIL. If you're a school in a state with an NIL law, you're going to be following by that law when other states that don't have NIL laws are going to be following by whatever the NCAA passes. And there's going to be differences. Now, they're going to be slight differences, but there's still going to be some differences. And for a while, it might be a little messy.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the fascinating one to me. And I was watching some of the Supreme Court stuff. There was a young lady who was who made her case from Vanderbilt. She was a female athlete. I think she was a swimmer. And she was talking about the disparity in men's and women's athletics. And I actually found everything she said to be very interesting, but kind of like Cole Beasley, the opposite of reality, right? Whereas in truth, the revenue generating sports carry these sports. And she said, you know, it's a known fact that the NCAA doesn't promote women's athletics. Like, that's not true. Just you can't generate money based upon the Olympic sports. How does it affect the non-revenue generating sports?
Well, the kind of interesting thing is it could impact the non-revenue sports even more than the revenue sports. And I say that because athletes of revenue sports, the basketball, the football, a larger percentage of them are going to go on to make a lot of money at the pro level than the percentage of those non-revenue sports going on to pro. So for non-revenue sports, like a softball player, a volleyball player, or you're talking about the track sprinter from Vanderbilt who was at the Senate hearing yesterday, and I was actually sitting right behind her. And those athletes, their prime time to make money is college. So if they have a big enough social media following, these NIL laws and rules will let them make the money that they never would be able to make because a lot of them won't go pro. While we know football and basketball players, a lot of them will go pro. Not all of them and not
but
a majority.
But Ross, here's the thing. Where's the money coming from?
Well, the money is coming from sponsors, you know, businesses and brands that want to sponsor these athletes. And here's the key: is social media following. That's the key here. So, forget about the sport, forget about the athlete. It's just the person. If somebody has 50,000 Instagram followers, 100,000 Instagram followers, which some volleyball, softball, soccer players at the NCAA do. That is a lot of eyeballs on your tweets, on your posts, and brands and businesses want those eyeballs.
Okay, the other part is the college football playoff. Ross Dellinger joined us from Sports Illustrated. Where are we on the expansion of the college football playoff?
Well, we're in, I would guess, step two of probably a five-step process. The first step was the working group, the CFP working group, studying this for 2 years and coming up with the model that we saw come out last week, the 12-team model. Step two is what they're on right now, or what they just completed in Chicago. All the commissioners met. They went over the model. They agreed to move the model on to step three, which is the president's, next week. They all meet in Dallas, and believe me, the presidents will do the same thing the commissioners did this week, Doug. They'll just move the model on to step four, which is a feasibility study, basically a survey-type deal, where they will basically just get feedback from around college football, ADs, coaches, players, administrators, and they'll give feedback for a couple months, and then everybody will meet again. And that is potentially the last step, the fifth step. In September, they will meet again, and they will potentially officially approve an expansion to the playoffs.
Do you like the 12 teams?
You know, I never thought, Doug, that I would. I was always kind of a smaller group guy. I didn't mind four, but I'd like to see that the group of five, if they were at least in the same division as the Power Five teams, they need to be a part of this in some way. So I was for a 6-8. But as I talked to commissioners for kind of a behind-the-scenes story that we wrote earlier this week, I realized why they came up with 12. And I've kind of been convinced that 12 is right, that it's a compromise, that it includes everybody. And I really like the way they did it, because I was scared of going 12, going too many, and you would water down the regular season, which, you know, I'm not a fan of the MLB postseason, NBA, because I think it's just too many games and it's watered down. But they kept the regular season important, especially late, because of the buys and because of the automatic bids for conference champions. And I really do like it.
I like the conference champion. I like the reward for that. I'm interested in what it does to the rest of college football, right? Like, first of all, we've done pretty well with, for the most part, getting what everybody considers the best team winning the national championship. Right? I think Ohio State with Cardell Jones was the only team, but that team was so loaded outside of quarterback. That was really kind of the question there, right? They get in as an at-large. They get in winning the Big 12 championship in dominating fashion and run roughshod over the thing. But for the most part, the best team has been the best team. I guess the question becomes, are we going to get to a place where we have, you know, like a 3 or 4 loss SEC team get in and go win the thing? And the other part is, when we get to multiple playoff games, are we going to have healthy enough bodies by the time we get to the end of it?
Yeah, I mean, I'll answer the first question. Yeah, you're definitely going to have some 3-loss SEC teams, right? You're going to have a 10-3 SEC championship game loser probably get in as a low, low seed, or a bad seed, you know, like a 12 or 11 seed or something. You will definitely have that. You're also going to have the second place finisher in an SEC division who's maybe 10-2 or even 9-3 get in. And yes, you might have those teams advance. Now it's a steep climb because they'll have to play in the first round. They won't get a bye. And they'll have to play on the road. Probably, they'll have to play on a campus somewhere, and then they'll have to go through 2 rounds after that. But you might have that. Now, the second part about the length, right, right now to win the national championship for a team that is in a conference, so not a Notre Dame, you have the conference championship game, which is the 13th game, and then you have 14 and 15 in the playoffs. So you play 15 games. This only adds one game to those teams that get a bye in the playoff. This adds one game. You would play 16. But for the other teams, you do add 2 extra games. But, Doug, you know, what's been said to me, and I think it's a good point, FCS plays 16 games to win a national championship on fewer scholarships. I'm not sure the whole length of games. You know, what my big concern about this health issue is, boy, these games are close together, Doug. They're smashed together. I mean, you're going to have four playoff
games, and they'll be played at a very, very high level of intensity.
That's correct. That's correct. And the weather, right? Some of them might be real up, you know, up north, and you just might have some issues. So, to me, the biggest concern isn't the number of games, but it's four games in about a five-week window. And then the week before that, you had championship games, which are huge, obviously. And the championship games really now, because you get an automatic, a lot of them get an automatic if you're high enough, that's a playoff game. I mean, so really you've got five levels here in a seven-week span. You got five huge games in a seven-week span or so, seven, eight-week span. And that's a little concerning. It is. And you can bet, as someone who lives in D.C. and has been covering the NIL issue, you can bet that will be brought up by lawmakers down the line here.
Ross Dellinger from Sports Illustrated. Ross, great stuff. Thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it.
All right, Doug. Thank you.
Pleasure's all mine. Great stuff. Really informative. Guy knows his stuff. And unfortunately, he's going to have to stop living his life because he was vaccinated. Right? You can't go out and be free.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's seven open coaching jobs in the NBA. There's this new push, obviously, for Becky Hammons or Teresa Witherspoon to get the job. I don't see it for Teresa Witherspoon. I don't see it for Becky Hammon outside of maybe San Antonio. If you've watched this thing, you realize that NBA teams want to be able to pivot and change at the drop of a hat. And fair or unfair, do I think a woman can be a head coach in the NBA? Of course I do. You know, you got dudes who didn't play in the NBA that have paid their dues, that have become coaches, some very successful, some not that successful. You know, Eric Spoelstra was a player, then when the video guy worked his way up. You compare that to Becky, and Becky was a tremendous player, played for the Russian national team, right? Played here in the States, and then has, you know, started to slowly work her way up front of the bench or whatever. But that organization, she's been around that organization. She's earned respect, at least whatever level of it, in the organization. Now, I've heard that there are some in the organization that aren't too keen on her. I think that's going to be anywhere, and especially when you're the first woman, it's going to be hard. But to go to a foreign organization, really hard. Really hard. I believe, this is me and my NBA sources have kind of agreed, like there's a new wave of NBA head coach. You're still going to have the guys that have been successful. You're still going to have some of the video guys that have worked their way up, right? Like, I'll give you somebody who we don't talk about, who's done, I think, a really good job, is Taylor Jenkins. Right? Like, Taylor Jenkins done a nice job as head coach of the Memphis Grizzlies. And that's a dude who started in the G League, right, back in 2008. Right? Started in the G League and then worked his way up. And he was with Bud in Atlanta. Then he was with Bud in Milwaukee, you know, and then he got a chance to be a head coach. That's even though he's big enough to have played, and he did go to the, you know, he went to Penn, and we went to Wharton. He's a brilliant guy. The fact is, like, he didn't play in the league, and he has done a good job with a young team. And I think that's where those opportunities can present themselves. But with teams that want to make the playoffs, that are really or championship minded, it's a hard one because oftentimes it's not necessarily just about hiring; it's about firing. If you hire Teresa Witherspoon, if you hire Becky Hammon, it's going to be met with great fanfare publicly. Privately, there'll be a lot of guys like, eh. Because the number one thing that these guys, many of the new generation, want is somebody who has been in their shoes, understands what they're going through, understand, and you have to be a great communicator. I think Brad Stevens is a marvelous head coach, and his record is outstanding in the NBA. His record is exemplary, obviously, in college basketball. I don't know if he was wired to communicate with his young players, and I don't think his staff was. Now, can you fill out a staff full of guys that are can relate and can build the bridge between the head coach and the player? Of course you can. That's what smart head coaches, smart GMs do. They build a total staff. But I think that the next wave of coaches are going to be the Chauncey Billupses of the world, the Sam Cassells of the world, the Fred Vinsons of the world, matching the Ty Lues, right? Guys that played, you know, have credit hours in the league, have been on benches, and can relate to many of the things that players are going through.